from the underground.
Welcome to a special edition of the Sports Hub Underground podcast. This is a Bruins post-game edition. This is Matt Dolliff, and I'm here with Ty Anderson, my usual co-host on the Sports Hub Underground. But we're doing this right after the Bruins lose to the Carolina Hurricanes 5-1, game one loss. Bruins down 1-0. Ty, I think the big story of the game overall for the Bruins is the missed opportunities on offense because they outshot Carolina and, you know, almost came up completely empty. So I guess just in general, like, was it something that that Carolina was doing, or you think the Bruins were just snake bit?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think truthfully, I look at tonight's game. I mean, great start, great road start. They get what, 9 of the game's first 10 shots. You know, Ronta's not seeing the puck all that well, but with that, it hits that point where, okay, you have enough shots on goal, but nothing to show for it. Where you start going, oh no, you know, you kind of get that feeling that, are they not gonna, is this going to come back to hurt them that they didn't capitalize early? And
it felt like that midway midway through the first period. It felt like that. It felt like, oh great. Now all those missed opportunities, the puck very nearly went in on one early chance, almost trickled in, and Carolina defense scooped it out before it went over the line, and then Carolina gets the bounces to go their way. So that's that. So, like, in terms of what Carolina did defensively, I think they did a good job with Bergeron and Marchand. I didn't think they made nearly as much of an impact out there as the other three lines. So I don't know. Am I seeing that accurately? What was your assessment of that line and how Carolina did against them?
I mean, you're definitely right in the sense that I think the best player on that line was DeBrusk. Right. Like, he was the most noticeable guy on that line, I thought. And another part of it that really kind of was not a great look for the Bruins. I shouldn't say great look, but a problem area for the Bruins was Bergeron at the faceoff dot. Did not win many key faceoffs that they needed victories in, particularly Ozone faceoffs. A lot of losses, I thought. And so they were quiet tonight. Now, will that stay that way? I mean, you know, I don't think we learn much about a series until we hit the 120 minute mark. When you have two games to kind of digest, sometimes even takes three, you know, but I think early on, what we're noticing is they want to have Staal out there against Bergeron's line. Staal had a great year defensively, one of the better two-way centers in the game. It makes sense. But they're going to try to bottle these guys up, and the Bruins have to try to find some matchups here and some situations to put these guys in a better position. You know, an example, I was very surprised that at the first icing of the third period, the Bruins don't put Bergeron, Marchand, DeBrusk out there. They put third line out there, and they lose the faceoff and it goes down the other end. And it's just like, okay, well.
See, Cassie was overthinking it there.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit, maybe he's trying to get those guys away from their matchup, maybe get a different kind of matchup, but you're going to probably have to go power on power in this series. Just the way it's looking right now, Carolina's a deep team. You don't have the benefit of last change. So you're going to have to sort of embrace that matchup and see where it falls.
So I guess before we move on, we could talk about the rest of the forward group. So I thought the second, third line you just mentioned, I thought overall they looked really good. And I kind of liked the fourth line. Fourth line had at least one shift out there where they had a couple of golden opportunities. So, I mean, it's frustrating because the Bruins in the playoffs in recent years, anyway, they seem to go as the first line goes. You know, if they could combine that, the secondary production they've been getting with a typical production that you get from Bergeron and Marchand, they'd be in great shape. You know, they've swept series, like they've dominated Carolina in the past because they had everyone going and they had that first line going. So I don't know. I guess it goes back to what you just said about them needing to find a way to adjust, because like, what else can you say? Like they just have to be more productive with that first line.
Yeah. I think that the third line started out pretty bad, but then they got better as the game went on. I thought they were one of your better lines in the third period, drawing a penalty. They get that look there. Coyle almost finds the net. If he can elevate it just a little bit, it's a goal. And now now it's a tight game, you know, to the finish. So they were there. It's just, can they build on it? I think that they were a bit out of sync tonight. You know, again, that Coyle chance is kind of an example of that. That happens a month ago and it finds the back of the net because, you know, they're reading the plays the right way, perfectly. You know, they know where everything's going. So you give them another game to see if they can find it. Thomas Nosek, I mean, this guy can't buy a goal. This is unbelievable now. I mean, it's just, it's been now since January 1st. It's been 4 full months and counting since his last goal. He's got to break out of
this. The effort's been there. I think I like kind of like Nosek.
Yeah, no, the effort's there. It's just at a, like, I mean, how much longer can you go with this before you contemplate moving him to the wing? Mm-hmm. You know, you have some fourth line reinforcements right now with Wagner and Bleed there. You can move Lazar to center. I just wonder, you know, how long do you, like I said, 2 to 3 games is when you kind of get a feel for what's working and what isn't working. But with Nosek, I don't know if there's anything you can do to get him in a position to score a goal, because you're really going to need it. I mean, he's creating. That's good. That's great. But at a certain point, I mean, the dam's got to break, or you got to do something to maybe put him in a better spot here.
Yeah, I think big picture wise, they might have to get a little more of an edge or a physical presence, I think, in the bottom six, based on how Carolina was approaching this in game one. So maybe we have to see a change there. But I mean, otherwise, the second line, though, I thought was more of a bright spot for them tonight. It seems like they're carrying over into the playoffs. Taylor Hall with a snipe on that goal. So I mean, what's your assessment of that line?
Yeah, I think they look good. It's just, it's a matter of, you know, the margin of error in this series is just gonna be so thin for the Bruins. It's just, you need all five guys, because Carolina operates as a five-man unit on the ice. I mean, this is a team, I think it's what makes them so good. Their connectivity as a team is so strong. So you have to have that. And right, so the blind passes, the, you know, ripping the shot and activating and missing it, and now it's 2-on-1, like Grizzly, like you gotta win that, right? Like if Hall's gonna take that shot and you're gonna activate, you have to come up with it. You can't even let there be a chance that you don't get it and it goes the other way. So the second line is good. They are your high risk line, right? And so they're gonna try to make high end plays, high risk plays. And if they don't make them, if they don't connect, you need your defenseman, or you just need the support there to make sure it doesn't go sideways on them. Because again, that's, you live and die with it, right? And they're going to need them in the series, but they need the defenseman to help them out there. Because if they don't, it's going to be trouble. And I thought Grizzly, I know this is not the forward grouping, but I thought Grizzly had a real rough game. I just didn't seem comfortable out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is typical. I think he's better in the regular season than he is in the playoffs. I mean, I think that's, you can get into all the details of individual games, take it by a case by case basis, but I just think in general he's a better regular season defenseman than a playoff defenseman. And I think we're seeing that already with this game. He pinches up on that fourth goal, and they get behind him easily, and you know, and then you know that's how that happens. Yeah, I think despite all the missed opportunities offensively, I think the defense was still the bigger issue for the Bruins, and that's not surprising. I think that's been the number one issue all season. I mean, going back to even the roster building portion last year, it's like they still need to get better on defense. They still need to get bigger on defense. They need to be better built for a postseason run defensively. And I mean, Lindholm, I thought was okay tonight, but there were also times where even he got pushed around a little bit. And I just think, I mean, we can transition into the goals that the Bruins gave up now. And then you made a good point that the Carolina's on the same page. They were like a machine especially when they had the puck. And I think Brick pointed it out on Nesson with at least both of those first two goals, that the Bruins had trouble with the way that they were rotating guys up and along the blue line. And they were losing sight of who to cover, and guys were getting open looks. And like, that's sort of how that goes. And I think at the same time, Carolina was the more physical team. They were better along the boards in the dirty areas. And, you know, yes, the bounces went their way, but that's sort of, you make those bounces happen by being the tougher, better team in those tougher areas. And I think that's how they were able to create those opportunities. And so that end rant there, like, you know, how'd you feel about the way they, you know, how Carolina handled themselves offensively and the Bruins defensive coverage?
Well, I mean, they're going to get guys to the front of the net, clearly, right? That's their first two goals. You got traffic, you got multiple bodies, you know, even friendly fire, you know, and so that's a problem for the Bruins. They need to work that out, or they need to just do the same, and they need to get into those greasy areas and get some goals. And you know, the whole toughness thing, the whole ability to get in there. I mean, you signed Nosek, 6'2". You signed Nick Foligno, a net front guy's entire career. You designed your team to be able to excel in these areas now. Like, Lindholm has the shot from the point. We've seen it, right? He's done it. Like, he came to the Bruins having taken, like, I think he was top 25 in the NHL, I want to say, in shots on goal. So we know he can do it. You know, like, you need these guys to sort of match what Carolina's doing to you at the other end, if you're not gonna be able to stop it. And so I thought, you know, defensively, I thought Brandon Carlo had a good game for them. I thought Fulbert and Clifton were as advertised. I don't think that they did anything egregiously wrong. It's just,
yeah, no, they were fine.
You when you have those kind of mistakes, right, where Carolina's parking guys in front of your net and creating these massive screens, this traffic jam in front of Ullmark, you're going to have to return the favor at the other end, and you're going to have to be able to play that kind of style, because the open ice just isn't really there for them. I mean, it didn't open up for the Bruins till the third period. It was there in the first 10 minutes, and then it was there in the final 10 minutes. You know, those 40 minutes in between, it was really hard for them to get anything going, space wise. So I don't know. I don't put as much in the defense as I do the offense. I mean, they got to execute, and they got to execute in a variety of ways. If Carolina's going to score garbage goals, you got to find a way to score garbage goals yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm referring to, though, is I didn't think Carlo was bad overall, but he did get beaten to a loose puck that led to the second goal, the Niederreiter one. And, like, I didn't think that was – I thought the effort on him was lacking there. Maybe he was gassed. Maybe he had been out there a while. But he just sort of glided toward the puck when it was open in the corner, and Carolina beat him to it easily. And there were other times where even Lindholm, like, he's usually good with the puck, Lindholm, but he got pushed around too physically. So I just thought, I was a little disappointed with the way Carolina sort of, you know, imposed themselves physically, because I thought the Bruins were going to be the ones to do that. So I don't know. We're saying the same thing, because they sort of need to get more physical, return that favor, like you said.
I'd be curious to see what the average shift length was tonight, because I felt like there was a lot of guys who were out there for way too long. And is that a product of what Carolina's doing? Is that a product of stubbornness, you know, and staying out there? And
yeah, I think what I'm talking to is, yeah, they were hemmed in their own zone for a while, I think, on the plays I'm referring to. So that was probably a factor. But I mean, it does go back to them being better along the boards and keeping the puck alive, and the Bruins being unable to get a breakout going. I think that's all part of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I think that one thing you can say about this series is that I don't think either one of these teams is particularly reliant on one line, right, in 2022. I don't think that the Bruins, you know, they have two lines now, two consistent scoring lines, so their first and second line. Even their third line for a little while was kind of carrying the load for them. And mm-hmm. I look at Carolina, they got Aho, and then they have Staal. Like, you got two lines there. And then you have Trocheck, so you get three lines and get it done. So you're not throwing all your eggs in one basket here. You need to capitalize on your chances. It's just as simple as that. And they didn't do that tonight nearly as much as they needed to. And what might sting the most is that they could get Freddie Anderson back for game two. He started skating. You never know, right? 48 hours can make a big difference for a guy. So if that happens, okay, now you're up against a guy who gave up one goal to your team this year. So they might be against it, but you gotta be more creative offensively, and you gotta capitalize on the chances you do generate, because this team doesn't tend to give up a lot of them.
But I think to your point, you said this before, I think, but like, other than early in the game and then down the stretch when you're in sort of desperation mode, I didn't think they generated much in terms of like quality chances. So I don't know. Does that just go back to what you're saying about trying to being able to get more to the inside and get to the net front? Because, yeah, they had opportunities, but it didn't feel like they were as golden as they could have been. Overall.
Yeah, no, I think
other than the start of the game, you know.
Yeah, I look at Carolina. I mean, the heat map, you know, the proverbial heat map against Carolina this year for the Bruins has been a joke, right? So I thought this was probably their better effort on that front. It's just they didn't have anything to show for it. right? And so, yeah. And so that's the problem. I mean, you know what you're up against here. You've had 180 minutes of it, of having a hard time getting into the prime areas. You got to figure out how to get there. It's not going to get any easier this time of year. It's not going to get any, you know, DeBrus said after
that's frustrating though,
the first intermission.
They know that though, Todd. That's why it's a little frustrating. And I don't know what if there's anything they could do. You know, like, I don't want to sound all doom and gloomy, but you know, when they're now 0-4 with a minus 19 goal differential against Carolina this year. So,
yeah, I mean, let's look at it this way. It was minus 2 for the first 55 minutes of this game. So I'm not worried about this team until they lose on home ice. And I think that's something I felt consistently throughout my entire time covering this team. It's just, you know, I've seen them win game one and then lose the series, right? I've seen, so it, nothing would surprise me. Yeah, exactly. So,
well, I mean, yeah, but we, yeah, we do have to see the forest for the trees because look, Carolina is the higher seed this year, undefeated against Boston. They were at home. They should have won tonight. They were supposed to win game one. So it's like,
yeah,
if the Bruins can maybe steal one in game two and get back and they get home ice back from them. So I guess that's, you got to look at the big picture there. But just prognosis after one game isn't good. We're in a spot where they need to adjust. So that's the part that's not so promising.
Yeah, exactly. And now I'm not going to sit here and spin this into, oh, the Bruins are in a great spot here, but is Ronta posting a 35 of 36 maybe good news? Like, are they now, are the Hurricanes like, okay, he played so well, we can't really go to Anderson right now because Ronta hasn't deserved it. And I don't know if that's representation of Antti Raanta. Like I this might be fool's gold.
It is weird. 35 of 36 is good no matter how you slice it, but I don't come out of that thinking like, oh, he stole them a win, he stood on his head. That's what I mean about like the opportunities that they had were only really like truly golden very early in the game. And other than that, it was not that hard of a night for Raanta, I thought.
No, exactly. So I'm curious now if Brind'Amour, I don't want to say tricks himself, but if the Canes trick themselves into maybe running the Raanta leash a little too long here.
Yeah,
and that gives the Bruins. Yeah, and that gives the Bruins a chance to come back to Boston 1-1. Because that'd be crazy, right? I mean, if that happens, that plays your advantage. I think coming back to Boston 1-1 was arguably best case scenario. I had this one going six. You could have easily talked me into it going seven. So if that's the case, you got to lose two, right? Or you got to lose three. So I'm not shocked by the result tonight. It's just they generated more chances than I thought they would based on the season series. You got to bear down. You got to bury some of these, right? And the odds indicate that you should at a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I think we've been over it, but like I did feel in the moment in that early, but it's like, oh man, they better finish it here because I feel like Carolina's going to get their feet under them at some point and they're going to start grinding them down because that's the type of team they are. They're deep and all that, and they're obviously built better to win in the postseason than they have in prior years. I think anyone that's been paying attention this season knows that this is not even close to the same Carolina team that the Bruins have dominated in prior playoff series. So all marked tonight. I think the fourth goal wasn't good, you know, off his head. Other than that, I mean, just the bounce is going Carolina's way. And I think more about them winning along the boards and sort of catching the Bruins, you know, out of position on the rotational stuff was really the story of those goals. And I mean, Allmark, I thought at times kept them in the game with some key saves. He made a couple good saves right before the goals, in fact. So I don't know. Do you put any of this on Allmark at all? Because that's usually, you know, if a certain guy was in net, that would be all we'd be talking about for the next 30 hours, regardless. But I don't put much of it on the goaltending.
No, I give him game two. I give him game two and I reassess from there because I do think that he made more big saves than bad goals, right? And so I look at it that way and I have no reason to, because when you make that switch, you got to understand it might be hard to go back to him after that, right? Like he's never been in this spot before. He's never played in the playoffs before. If you pull him after just one game, it may be tough to go back to him if you have to do that mentally for whatever reason, right? And so he's been more good than bad for about a month and a half now. So I roll with that and I give him the chance to work out of this. And And I think the idea, if you want to go to Swayman, I like the idea of going to Swayman on home ice more than I like a game two on the road in Carolina. I just think you want to protect him a little bit if you can. And so I think you want to maybe learn from last year, right? You didn't go to him in game six in the island. You could have gone to him in game five on home ice. So I think that if it gets to that, I think you'd want to go to him in the garden for game three. But
the decision might be a little easier now than if you have Tuukka lurking.
Yeah, exactly. That
look on his face.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so I go back to Omar because I don't think he was a problem tonight. The problem's at the other end. The problem was in front of him when it did break down defensively, having two guys parked in front of him. I mean, that can't happen. It just can't happen at 5-on-5. You gotta clear him out. You gotta give him a chance. The only one I didn't like was the fourth goal, like you mentioned. But I look at it, you got traffic on the first two. The third one's a gifted 2-on-1 with some high talent out there for Carolina. So the fourth one's the only one you can really fault him on. So I thought he did his job. So I go back to game two.
I would too. Yeah. That would be a rash decision. I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think there'll be a change in goaling. You mentioned earlier changes in the forward group, bottom six. Do you foresee maybe any adjustments on the defense, whether it's, you know, mixing up the pairings or switching a guy in who was not in the lineup tonight? Do you see any changes on the D coming after tonight?
You know, I don't, not yet. Maybe game three. I would say that it's hard for me to envision them scratching Matt Grzelcyk. It's just hard for me to imagine that happening. But he's a minus three. He logs 20 seconds on the power play tonight. A guy who his role may be slipping a little bit. So I just wonder. I wonder if that would be something that if he has a bad game too, do they go to Mike Riley in game three, a guy who has experience playing with McAvoy and with Carlo? So it's very similar to Grzelcyk in that regard. You don't have to reinvent the wheel to make that switch. But I think with Riley, you're going to run into this kind of the same problems because he doesn't necessarily handle forechecking pressure all that well either, as we learned against Islanders last year. So interesting to see, but I don't think changes would happen until game three. That's just my read on it, because you do want to get a feel for matchups and how they work over a two-game sample size versus 15 minutes. It's a little early, I think, to make any changes. It would be a deviation from the norm from Cassidy and even Brind'Amour, for that example, to make any big changes here entering game two.
Yeah, I think we'll mostly see the same lineups for both teams going into game two, certainly for Carolina. All right, well, we can call it a pod there, but do you have any closing thoughts or we've been sprinkling in talk about changes and adjustments. So like just strategically, like with the guys they have, you know, they might keep the same lineup, but like what on the ice needs to be different more than anything else? If you could distill it down to one take.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say execution, but I think you need to win more faceoffs because these are two of the premier puck possession teams in the NHL. And it's a simple formula. Whoever has the puck more is going to win the game. And tonight, I think Carolina was that team. They almost had almost a 60% faceoff win percentage. So when that's happening, the way they play, the way their defensemen can control the puck as well. I mean, you're playing into their strengths. So you got to win it. You got to win your battles at the dots, and you really got to sort of bear down here and get to those high danger areas. If you can do those two things, I like your chances. I liked their game tonight. I as crazy as it sounds, for 40 minutes, I liked their game.
Yeah, look, a bounce goes their way earlier in the period. It could be a completely different game. That's how it goes in the playoffs, you know?
Exactly. So,
team like Carolina will grind you down if you don't capitalize. So I guess that's sort of what you've been saying this entire show.
Yeah, it's just you gotta, like, they're not going to relent, right? So you kind of got to beat them into submission at the same time. So it's just they gotta play more of that grinding style. They need more of that third period. You know, they need more of what was in between Taylor Hall's goal and the goal that made it 4-1, like, because that was mostly good, you know, with the exception of the Grzelcyk miss at the offensive end that sparked the 2-on-1. They were pressuring, the Bruins were. And if you can bring more of that to the table, give you that and give you what the first 10 minutes of game one, the first period were, I like your odds. You just got to find that level, right? And you got to stick to it. You can't have the low lows.
Yeah, I think they it seemed like they relied too much on we're gonna beat them with our speed and skill, you know. And they didn't. I think they do need to lean more into the physical game. I think they could beat them at their own game if they you know commit to it. So that's what I'm looking to see from them in game two. Seems like we're on the same page there. Okay, but we'll call it there. All right, thanks for listening. I wish it would be more fun if we were talking about a Bruins win to kick off the post game podcast for the Bruins playoffs. But we're gonna try our best to do a post game pod after each and every single Bruins playoff game. Hopefully, they can get out of this round and we get to do more than four or five of these things. Not a promising start for the Bruins, but we think some changes in the on ice strategy could bode well for them. So other than that, thanks for listening. We'll have a regular episode of the Sports Hub Underground coming out later this week, and we'll have more post-game shows for you coming soon. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.